There was a time when getting what you needed from the store wasn't very convenient. Aren't you thankful times have changed? Now you can go online and find more stuff quicker than ever before. When you're looking for ministry-related resources or entertainment that's safe for your family, you don't have to scour the internet. The AFA Resource Center has so much of that and more all in one place. Resources.afa.net. You'll find videos from the AFA Cultural Institute, American Family Coffee, kids' videos, stylish apparel, and so much more. If it's been a while since you visited, take a few minutes to check out the new stuff. And if you're new to AFA, take some time to stop by and see all there is to offer. Either way, you'll find powerful instruction to help you grow in your faith and tools to help you share it. And when you shop there, you're also supporting the ministry of AFA. It's a win-win. Take some time today and visit resources.afa.net. Resources.afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Thursday, December the 12th, 2024. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Good morning.
And Chris Woodward.
Hello.
And so, I like your enthusiasm there.
It's my first day back. Yeah, I've been away burning some vacation days.
Yes. Burning vacation time?
That's what I do.
You need to invest your vacation time, Chris.
Sounds like a good book title.
I don't know. Are you supposed to be productive on vacation, Ed?
I'm burning. I'm burning vacation time starting Monday.
Productivity and vacation, two words that just don't go together, I don't
think. Okay, here's a little confession. I always have a long list, like this. So I save up vacation days the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I always have a long list of projects.
Uh-huh.
That I'm going to work on.
Yeah, you are.
And usually don't do any of them.
I'm going to do it next year.
Oh, well, this is the time of year I don't see my two sons.
Yeah, they go hunting.
Yeah, I guess. Either they're at the casino. I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure they're going hunting.
No, they're going
yesterday
hunting.
Yesterday I saw in Walker's office, he had magazines for his rifle. He had his binoculars. He had all kinds of stuff.
They're, it's the Lord, and then their family, and then deer hunting. And sometimes those get out of order.
Yeah, that can happen.
This time of year. So, yeah.
For those hunters.
I'll see them sometime in February.
It's idolatry. No.
You turn on the hockey game.
Well, I turn on hockey and college football.
It is funny how we judge others, and we say, they spend too much time doing so-and-so. And then we don't apply that same to ourselves on whatever it is we enjoy doing.
Are you saying human beings tend to be hypocrites?
Yes, I am. Oh, me. So, all right, we got Jan Markell coming up to the bottom of the hour. We got Jenna Ellis in just a few minutes here on the program. And so we look forward to having Jenna and Jan. And I wanted to mention, what do we want to mention here before we get started? There's one story we wanted to get to. Yeah, go ahead,
Chris. Yeah, President Joe Biden is acting like Santa Claus.
Is he now?
And I say that because in the biggest single-day act of clemency in modern history, President Biden is commuting the sentences of roughly 1,500 people who were released from prison and placed on home confinement during the coronavirus pandemic. Biden is also pardoning 39 Americans convicted of nonviolent crimes. This, of course, comes after the announcement from Joe Biden that he was pardoning his son, Hunter Biden. To put things in perspective here, I mentioned this is the biggest single-day act of clemency in modern history. The second largest single-day act of clemency was by Barack Obama with 330 names shortly before he left office. So Biden hit this one out of the park if he was trying to set a record.
Wow. How many did he?
1,500 people.
So you got clemency or you got pardoning? You got both, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, commutation. A commutation reduces.
You don't want to be one of those. Am I right?
They wrote a manifesto.
Yes. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah, those commutations and other Marxists.
They're in there.
Commutation is when you reduce a person's sentence after they've been convicted. A pardon basically says they're not guilty. I mean, we do have a lawyer coming on.
Yeah, who could we ask? You were going to go to law school, right?
Yes.
Just didn't ever make it there because...
I became a Christian and got called into the ministry. But that did not stop my mother from introducing me to people and say, "This is my son. He left law. He left being a lawyer to be a minister." And this conversation twice actually happened in front of the people she was introducing me to. And I said, "Mom, I was never a lawyer." She said, "Well, you went to law school."
Right.
I said, "No, I didn't go to law school.
Further than I did.
I was pre-law." She said she in undergraduate school, and she said, "Oh, well, same thing."
Yeah. I watched Law and Order a lot.
I'd go, "My, come on."
Ding, ding.
Yep.
Law and Order. Ding, ding. Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Yeah.
Then they walk into some store that some employee is talking to them and telling them everything they know.
Yeah.
And they're always talking while they're putting boxes on a shelf.
Yeah, that's
yeah, I
that
saw
is
the killer.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. He had, you know, he had red hair and he talked funny and came by here. But
that is true. They are always.
They're doing something.
They're doing something.
They're moving around. They don't stop to answer the call. It's like when two detectives walk in to ask you about a murder, you don't stop.
Right.
You don't. No, you keep working.
You don't keep putting up boxes of Charmin.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
Have you noticed?
Yes. No, that's.
It's a standard. Cliche for the Law and Order
trope.
Shows. All right, so your story is about that's one of the lead stories is about President Biden opening up the jail cells.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's on AFN.net, okay. which All is right. our website.
Yes. All right, so joining us right now is Jenna Ellis. Jenna Ellis is host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time. Right here on AFR, and Jenna also has a podcast we'll mention in just a moment. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning, and you know, I really take umbrage, Ed, that you don't think that you can be a lawyer in ministry. I mean, that is a thing.
I didn't notice that.
I don't even know how to spell
lawyer, Christian, two words that don't go together.
Well, when I became a Christian, my dad, this is the absolute truth. Because I was in undergrad, my plan was to go to law school, become a lawyer, and I was on the debate team and all that kind of stuff. And so my dad, when I became a Christian, nobody else, my sister was, but my dad wasn't at the time. He said, "Ed, you cannot be a lawyer and a Christian." That's what he told me.
He was serious.
He said, "You got to make all kinds of compromises and all
that."
He
knew that much, right?
And you know, the problem actually is that too many Christians believe that. And so they don't take their biblical worldview into their legal practice. And that's actually a really big problem that that I address in my book that is now 10 years old, by the way, which, you know, kind of makes me feel old. Yeah, but The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. And it kind of goes through some of my own law school experience as well. And I know you kind of meant that as a joke, but it is actually a serious thing that Christians don't take their biblical worldview into their vocation, including lawyering.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean it as a joke. My dad actually believed that.
Right, because he wasn't a believer, and in his mind, his experience with lawyers, they were shysters.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. I always say that, you know, 99% of lawyers give the 1% of good ones a bad name.
Yeah.
So.
And nobody likes lawyers until you need one.
That's definitely true. Yeah. Yes. And I'm a recovering lawyer now because I don't practice in Florida and, you know, kind of left all of that in Colorado. So I call myself a recovering lawyer now.
Hey, before we get to the topic, we want to talk drones with you. But someone sent around to leadership last night 5,000 what is this? People watching your show, Jenna Ellis in the Morning?
We're streaming on X. So actually, yesterday on X, we had about 9,000 people tune in just on the X platform. So that's actually gotten us a whole different demographic of audience here at AFR, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. Okay, here's the thing. You jumped 5,000 viewers, I think. That was the thing that was sent out.
Yeah.
So, hey, congratulations.
Thanks.
On what you're doing, the folks that you're reaching. I've been listening the last few mornings and try to, you know, get around to different shows to listen. And always great guests. I didn't actually get to listen to all of it this morning, but we wanted to kind of have you on to talk about drones. By the way, folks, Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard weekdays at 7 a.m. Central Time on AFR, because this story is a big deal, and you had a guest on to discuss this. Why don't you kind of fill us in?
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad that you went this direction, because at first I thought you were going to say that this is going to be like the live, you know, performance reviews at the end of the year. Like, I was listening to your show and, you know, here's where we're going. But
no.
So, you know, thankfully we're going in the drone direction.
Yes.
But yeah, this is a wild story that mystery drones are over New Jersey. And the Pentagon held a briefing. Their spokesperson came out yesterday to respond to Representative Van Drew, who's a Republican from New Jersey, who actually said in a Fox News interview yesterday, and I played part of the clip on my show, he said that he's gotten a briefing from undisclosed sources, but he claims that they're very trustworthy, that these drones are coming from Iran, and that there is a mothership off the coast of New Jersey that are launching these drones. And of course, this would be synonymous basically with the Chinese spy balloon, that test balloon that we all remember that the Biden administration didn't actually do anything about until it had traversed the entire United States collecting who knows what data. And so the interesting thing about the Pentagon's briefing is that they say that they don't know where these are from. They're not U.S. military, but they're very clear that they're not a threat. And my question is, well, if you know absolutely nothing about them, how do you know that they're not a threat?
And how do you know they're not from Iran, Jenna?
Right.
If you say you don't know anything about them, how can you deny what the congressman is saying?
Well, and especially when this is a congressman who clearly would have access to some very high-level people who could give him this type of briefing. I mean, it's not just, you know, a reporter claiming a source, which could also be accurate. But, you know, this is somebody who clearly would have this kind of intel, and he's willing to put it forward to the public. So at this point, I mean, I'm personally more inclined to believe Representative Van Drew's sources than the Pentagon's denial, especially when the Biden administration has really done nothing. As my guest this morning, Gerard Folletti, he's a lawyer with a lawfare group, and he's an expert in foreign policy. And he was saying that this is just another dereliction of duty from the Biden administration to basically point fingers. And they actually were suggesting, the Pentagon was suggesting, that they were turning to local law enforcement. And I'm thinking, yeah, let's get the local cops out there, you know, to see what's going on with these drones from a mothership that, of course, isn't going to have like a flag draped across it saying, hi, we're from Iran. You know, those are our call signals. I mean, that obviously that's not going to be the case. And so you have this sort of incompetency of pointing fingers and saying, not it, not it, not it. Meanwhile, all of these drones are continuing to surveil.
Jenna, what I don't understand, if a Cessna 172 flies into D.C. airspace, they scramble F-16 fighter jets. And that Cessna better turn around or they're going to shoot it down. They're not doing anything with these drones. And a lot of people perhaps aren't aware, these drones are as big as trucks. They aren't your, you know, that drone that somebody gets for Christmas. Mm-hmm. These are huge. And why don't they send somebody to shoot one of these down to examine them at least? And that's what's really perplexing about this. They're doing nothing about these things.
It's shocking and very frustrating. And Representative Van Drew on Fox News yesterday called for shooting them down, which seems like, to your point, if it's violating U.S. airspace and they're clearly coming from off the coast, then and they're this type of what would seem to be military grade. I mean, I'm not aware you can just go and, you know, down to Walmart and buy one of these, you know, tank sized drones. Then clearly something is going on, and you would think that military action would be appropriate. But as my guest said this morning, this all points back to Joe Biden, because he would have to give that order. And not only is he incompetent in the last, you know, 40 or so days of his lame duck presidency, but he doesn't even know what's going on. And so everybody else is having to sort of say, well, you know, we don't really know what to do about it.
Hey, it's Chris.
Embarrassing for the United States.
Yeah. It's Chris here. I apologize for speaking over you. You know how oftentimes when a nation or a rogue group within that nation does something, a lawmaker, somebody will say, you know, our adversaries are watching this and they're going to try something too. Let's say for the sake of the argument, it was Iran or Iran that is behind these drones here. Do you think the lack of an action from Biden over the Chinese spy balloons kind of, you know, led Iran to think, hey, let's try something?
I mean, why not? Because if you are showing your weakness to your adversaries, then they're probably thinking, well, hey, let's try our luck because the Chinese were allowed to traverse this spy balloon across the United States, gather whatever data it gathered before it was shot down. And so if we can successfully fly these drones over, gather the data, then at that point, if it's transmitted back to our enemies, it doesn't even matter if they lose the drones themselves. The point is that they were able to surveil, and a lot of these reportedly have come close to military installations, high security areas. So, I mean, they're not just, you know, going over a peaceful little township. This is a national security risk.
Janice, switching topics real quick before we move on here. The President Biden, Chris mentioned about the pardon and clemency. You want to read that again?
Yes. Biden is commuting the sentences of roughly 1,500 people who were released from prison and placed on home confinement during the coronavirus pandemic. Biden is also pardoning 39 Americans not named Robert Hunter Biden. They were convicted of nonviolent crimes.
Does this matter? I mean, is this normal? Is this all presidents use the power of the pardon before they leave office? Go ahead.
Yeah, this was reportedly the single most, you know, broad sweeping amount, just sheer amount of pardons in a single day from a sitting president. So I think it's novel in that respect. But I think more importantly, because he still has about, you know, what is it, like 38 or so days, this potentially is laying the groundwork for more controversial pardons down the road, like what has been floated in media to pardon members of his own administration, like perhaps Alejandro Mayorkas, who was impeached and then the Senate declined to actually hold a trial on some of the breach of the law, or Liz Cheney or Adam Schiff, some of the people that were involved in the January 6th committee. You know, some of those things, if Biden's just going, well, look, you know, I'm pardoning a bunch of people, so they're just all included in this, then it's starting to create this media narrative.
Can you, this is one last question I have. Can a president issue a pardon for crimes not yet committed?
So he can issue a preemptive pardon for crimes not yet charged. He can't do something like, say, for example, pardon his son into the future. So a pardon would have to cover past actions as of the date of the pardon, which is what spans Hunter Biden's, you know, 11 years. But it was January 1st, I think, of 2014, all the way through the December 4th pardon date of 2024. So you can do preemptive pardons in the sense that that there's no legal action yet. And we remember Ford pardoning Nixon,
yeah,
when there was just that investigation going on. So that halted the legal action. You just can't pardon into the future.
Okay.
Can't pardon into the future, Ed.
Yeah, for crimes not yet committed.
Yeah.
Get out of jail free card.
So Hunter still's got to be careful with that crack, is what I'm saying.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Okay, see what you did, Jenna, there.
Yeah. All right, Jenna, tell us about your podcast real quick.
Yeah, so it's called On Demand with Jenna Ellis, and you can go to our podcast page and click on that link. And we do it once a week. It's released on Friday, so come in tomorrow. We do a deep dive on a particular topic of interest, and if you have a question or a topic or a guest you'd like to hear, you can reach me at jenna@afr.net. And last week, we had a really great insight from Ken Cuccinelli, who's a former DHS official in the Trump administration, talking about how the president could actually implement mass deportations. I learned so much just from listening to Ken Cuccinelli. And then tomorrow in our release, we have Scott Horton, who wrote a really great book on the history of the conflict in Ukraine and how it was actually provoked by Washington. He goes all the way back to even pre-Bill Clinton days and kind of gets us up to speed of what happened in the entire Ukraine conflict through the first Trump administration. Really fascinating, a deep dive. So again, the podcast title is On Demand, and you can find that at AFR.net.
Thanks, Jenna. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Jenna Ellis joining us there. And check out that podcast, Burberry.
I'm going to listen to that one. That sounds really interesting on Ukraine.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot there that most Americans don't know about.
Yeah. That presidential pardon and clemency process, I just don't. I guess that's a good idea. I don't know. Was that go all the way back to our founders?
I think that's in the Constitution.
Okay.
I think it's part of the enumerated powers and the separation of powers and checks and balances. So you can't, the president does have the ability, I guess, if there's a politically motivated prosecution, like against someone in the president's administration, then the president says, all right, then, or, you know, then I'm going to pardon him. Yeah. You know, but that only applies, of course, to
you need a pardon, Chris?
I don't.
Brad, you need one?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm going to call the White House and tell them, hold on, we need
put your name on the list.
We need a few more.
We're going to make you an American, an honorary American, Fred.
You know, Biden doesn't even know who he pardoned. I guarantee. He doesn't know.
No.
They didn't sit down with him, say, Mr. President, we need 3 or 4 hours here to go over this list with you.
Yeah.
I don't think that happened. I just think whoever his chief of staff is, whoever that is, we even know, or whoever's in charge, basically got their friends to send them over a list.
Yeah.
And said, send all the people you want out over and we'll
is
do
it. Is it still Jeff Zients? Is that still the chief of staff?
I'm not sure.
Has he always been the chief of staff? I never heard his name.
No, I think there was someone initially for the Biden administration.
Well, anyway, we just know that President Biden, he didn't do it. Yes, his name is on it, and yes, he's responsible for it, but we know that with this many people, this was everybody at the White House, hey, you know anybody needs out of jail?
So Jeff Zients is current. Ron Klain was.
Okay.
I remember him. Yeah. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, I think probably they asked Democrats in Congress.
Yeah.
Send your list.
Send your list.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just rubber stamped it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not unusual, I don't think, for presidents.
It's the number that's unusual.
The number is unusual.
Right? Isn't that what you said?
Oh, yeah. It's the single biggest day.
Most presidents don't sit down like you're suggesting.
No, they don't.
Go back and forth. Do we really need to pardon this
guy? Maybe the high-profile ones.
Yeah.
They do.
Remember Bill Clinton? Didn't he pardon his brother or something?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. Trump pardoned Jared's father.
Father,
So Jared is the son. Ivanka's husband.
Yeah, you either got to know somebody or you have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now, Biden does claim to know a lot of people, so it is possible, not likely, but possible, he does know all these people from his various walks of life, which we've aired his soundbites.
And there's much more coming.
This is just getting started.
Oh, this is just getting started. He's got, 39 days left or whatever?
There'll be more. A daily release of...
You're going to see a bunch more.
No pun.
It does get him back in the news. I mean, how often do people talk about Joe Biden now unless he does something to get himself in the headlines?
Yeah.
He's kind of an irrelevant president.
You think he'll tell Hunter and get me a list of all your pals?
Get Burisma on the phone.
You need a pardon?
I think this administration is going to wind up going down as one of the most corrupt in American history.
Yes,
and one of the most corrupt, in which nothing happens to anyone.
Yeah,
they all got away with it.
Well, now Hunter Biden was convicted.
Yeah,
he was tried and convicted.
And what happened? Bupkis.
Yeah,
that's all. That's all.
No, he was sent to go to prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, he was pardoned. You're right, But anyway, all right, we're going to take a time out right here. We'll be back with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
In many ways, abortion was on the ballot this past election, and there's reason for concern. There are many counties, cities, and states who have radicalized abortion, and thousands of tiny babies will continue to lose their lives every day. Which is why the Ministry of Preborn is on the front lines for at-risk babies and mothers with unplanned pregnancies. Preborn sponsors clinics positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country by providing them with the resources they need to rescue babies. Preborn continues to expand their life-affirming care. Their end-of-year goal is to equip 10 more clinics with ultrasound machines. These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most clinics can afford. When a woman meets her baby on ultrasound, she is twice as likely to choose life. And when she comes to a Preborn Network clinic, she will also be embraced with God's love. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and now through a match, your gift is doubled. How many babies can you save? Please donate. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hope you're having a nice day. Today's Thursday, December the 12th, 2024. And Steve will be along in just a little bit. Ed's with me, and Fred, and also Chris. Fred, our guest.
Our guest is Jan Markell, and host of Understanding the Times, heard right here on American Family Radio, Saturday at 1 p.m. Central and Sunday at 12 noon. Jan, I know we tease you a lot about the weather, but I was watching Fox's weather forecast for your neck of the woods this morning. And they said with a wind chill in Duluth, now I know Duluth is a little bit away from Minneapolis where you are, minus 38. Are you feeling that there today?
You know, I think it resembles the planet Mars. I really do.
Jan, if you would go on outside and stand on the patio and do this interview, if you would, so we can get the true sense of what's going on there.
Listen, Tim, it's ironic you say that because I just had a package delivered on my front steps, and I don't want to go out and get it because I'm going to turn into an icicle.
What happened? Look at there, Miss Markell. She froze up.
You don't have to worry about porch pirates. I guess
she was getting a package. That's sad how people can go like that. Oh man.
I'll have to air reruns on my program then.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Fred, what were you going to ask
Jan
about?
We want to talk to you about the Middle East. And the latest chapter in the last year or so is what's going on in Syria. How are you feeling about the rebels coming in? Assad has gone to be with his friend Putin in Russia. Is anything going to change with regards to the relationship between Syria and Israel?
No, I don't think so. Probably not at all. I mean, evil was replaced by evil. These rebels are a bunch of Al-Qaeda and ISIS and other pretty much undesirables. And I think, here's what Israel has done, is I think everyone knows because they're talking about it so much, and that Israel's preemptively gone and taken out 80% of weapons and things like that, air bases in Syria that can be used for nefarious purposes. 80% of those, whatever they are, that can come against Israel have been taken out by Israel in the last 2 to 3 days. So you can see she's trying to act preemptively and keep the bad guys from coming in and descending more on Israel. So no, this isn't. Here's the thing, and I think the darkest side of what has just happened would be the Christians in Syria. I mean, there are many. They may not all be a certain denomination, maybe there's Baptists and Catholics and you name it. But the point is, you know, they follow the cross, and they're about to get annihilated because Bashar Assad, as evil as he was, he left the Christians alone. He told others to leave him alone, but that is now gone. And I'm not making him out to be a saint because he's just the opposite.
So what do you think is going to happen to the Christians there? I mean, do you think they're going to flee? That's kind of what happened in Iraq after, after the collapse of the country, was you had all these hardliners. And the country of Iraq basically emptied out of Christians. They were told to leave, or you pay the tax, or you die. Do you think they're going to flee from Syria?
Well, I think if they're capable, they will. But you know, I mean, we got to be realistic. Not all of them can do that. And I just think there's going to be carnage. And I'm not the only one. The organizations over there, the various Christian concern organizations that reach out in Syria, are expressing just tremendous fear about what's going to happen now. I think anybody who's following the situation, this is our biggest concern, and it should be our biggest concern. Look, Israel could take care of itself. And Isaiah 17 implies, and doesn't imply, it states that Israel is going to be annihilating Damascus at some future point, and that's Isaiah 17, verse 1, and that probably would be nuclear, and it probably be in the future. That's certainly not now. But point is that Syria has always played a role. Saul of Damascus, I mean, he was on the road to Damascus, and she's playing a role now. But here's the bottom line, I think, gentlemen. I see this as further destabilizing the Middle East. Look, Libya got sunk, Iraq, Afghanistan, now Syria. I think this is a setup for some superhuman person like the Antichrist who will come along someday and offer peace in this entire region, and for that matter, the entire world. But it'll start with the Middle East, and I think this is a setup for that.
Hmm. Hey, Jan, what do you got coming up on your show this weekend?
We'll talk about some of these some of these things, Tim, this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, Syria, is that the same as the Bible mentions as Assyria? Is it two different? You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. I don't think it is.
You don't know what I'm talking about? Yeah,
the Assyrians, have to look it up on an old map.
The Assyrians were an empire that its land that it controlled supersedes that of Syria now, but Syria got its name from that empire.
I got you. Okay.
I think that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Jan. We look forward to your show this weekend. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me. Okay. Goodbye now.
Take care.
It's our good friend Jan Frozen Markell in Minnesota. And listen,
38 below wind chill factor
in
chilly.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
I in New Brunswick, Canada, I lived for about 3 weeks, minus 40.
Minus 40.
Yeah.
You had to one up.
Wind chill. I'm sure Jan's probably got some.
Yes, she's got.
Yeah, some stories.
So you get up in the morning, you have to, if you start your car, you got to let it run for about a half hour.
Yeah.
Before you start down the road. And you'll start down the road, and your tires, where they have been sitting on the ground all night, they stay flat like that. So you're driving down the road, and you're hearing clunk, 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 because it takes a while for the air in the tires to warm up as you go along. It is horrible.
I don't see how I know they do, because not everyone has a garage in these big cities. You park on the on the side of the road,
driveway,
the sidewalk, or your driveway. But it's really amazing that people can, in that kind of cold, you heat your car, you warm your car up, but then it sits.
You have block heaters.
Yeah.
You plug your car in, and there's a heater in the bottom of the block of the car, and that keeps it warm. But I've told you guys the story when I was training in the military in Saskatchewan. I had to have my car towed in twice to a garage to thaw out because it wouldn't start.
Just thaw out.
Tow truck had to come, take it into a garage, thaw it out.
They're like ground beef for lasagna.
Well, towards the end of my stay in
in
Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, which is north of where Jan
where
is.
Was this?
Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Oh, Moose Jaw. Yeah, I've
heard. Yeah, right. if your community's named Moose Jaw, maybe you don't. Yeah. Maybe human beings don't live there. Yeah.
Right.
But at the last, I would leave the car running all night because it was cheaper to on the gas that to keep it running all night than for the tow truck to come and thaw it out.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
It is.
Yeah. I do not want to retire in that climate.
Right. No. It's stories like this, and I'm more thankful that my dad moved the family down here from Ohio years before I was
born. And Ohio's middle of the road, I guess you could say. Yeah. They have the cold weather, too, but it's not like Minnesota.
No.
I was born
certainly
here.
Not like Moose Jaw.
Or Sasquatch.
My dad did live in Wapakoneta, Ohio, for any of our listeners in that area. Wapakoneta is where Neil Armstrong is from.
Is that right?
First man that walked on the moon, yes.
All right.
Or did he?
Yeah. Yeah, the locals call it Wapak.
What was the name of the town?
Wapakoneta.
That's how a lot of the songs started in the 50s.
Yeah, the Carpenters, they were starting out.
Wapakoneta.
Huh?
Yes.
Do it again, Ed.
Wapakoneta.
Am I right?
Yeah.
That's a doo-wop area.
Yeah, it's a doo-wop.
That's where this town got its name.
Wapakoneta. Now, here in Mississippi, we have some names. There's Shookalock, which is anybody's guess. I don't even know. The first time traveler could go back and ask Native Americans back in the day how they pronounce it, they would go, I don't know. That's the way my dad always said it.
Right. Yeah. Shookalock. All right. So you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. What's the next story?
Well, we spent a little bit of time talking about the current president, Joe Biden. Let's focus now on President-elect Trump. He rang the opening bell today at the New York Stock Exchange after being recognized for the second time by Time Magazine as its Person of the Year. I have a little bit of the audio from the bell ringing event, clip one. That was the bell ringing.
Do we have any?
I don't have any of the remarks, but obviously the crowd was very excited to have him there. Going to make the stock market.
Well, a couple things there. You know, President Trump is a native New Yorker. So, you know, and ringing the bell at the Wall Street opening, that's a Monday through Friday ritual forever. And you're an honored guest when you're asked to ring the bell. So, listen, that's got to be a good feeling for him as a New Yorker to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like getting the key to the city, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's up there thinking to his adversaries and enemies, how do you like them big apples?
Yeah.
Take that, Alvin Bragg.
Yeah. He did say in a story that Fred
with the big apples.
Yeah. Fred posted an AP story on our website. Before he rang the opening bell, Trump spoke at the exchange and called it a tremendous honor. He went on to say, Time Magazine getting this honor for the second time. I think I like it better this time, actually. By the way, J.D. Vance was there with him, as was his daughters, and First Lady-elect Melania Trump.
Well, listen, Time Magazine, of course, it doesn't have the impact that it used to have in terms of own culture.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of Man of the Year was highly anticipated. And it didn't, I don't know, become Person of the Year or something like that. Maybe. Does it still call Man of the Year?
I think it's called Person of the Year now.
Person of the Year.
Person of the Year. But still, you know, they probably don't like giving it to anybody remotely conservative.
No, in fact, Kamala Harris was on the short list. They could have.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, she was on the short list, according to a political story.
She's 5'8".
That's taller than I am.
I think 5'7", something like that.
Okay, I mean, it's not a list of short people.
Oh, my bad.
It is a short list for Time Magazine's choice.
Okay, well, thank you for that clarification.
Randy Newman did have the short people.
Well, the next cover is going to be Loser of the Year. Okay. She's up for that, too.
You guys finished?
Oh, Ed.
You guys finished?
Fred just.
Okay, so Kamala Harris, Kate Middleton, Elon Musk, Benjamin Netanyahu also were considered. Time has already announced that WNBA star Caitlin, I apologize for being white, Clark, as athlete of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, I just needed to get that shot in.
I mean, they had to give it to Trump. Even if if he had not been elected, he was still the most talked about person of all of 2024.
It's the political comeback of the century.
Yes, it is.
He was maybe dead. Of American history.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, he was there. We were about to have the burial ceremony for Donald Trump, the candidate, right?
The former president.
After what happened January 6th and all that. So
if they had given it to Kamala Harris, Time Magazine should have just shut their doors at that point because nobody would take them seriously. Right. I don't even think lefties would take them seriously at that point.
Well, she'll always have the view.
Another reason why the Wall Street is cheering there is because they're anticipating some good times under President Trump's administration.
Yes.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
They are.
Big time.
Typically, I always say, and Chris quotes me, the stock market goes up and stock market goes down. And it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, the ebb and flow is going to be there. However, business and the stock market generally like Republican presidents better because they know that they're not going to pile on more new taxes on the American people and businesses, and they're not going to pile on more new regulations on businesses. So Wall Street generally views Republicans as more business friendly. Therefore, the stock market generally does well under Republican presidents over a period of time. So you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Any of you guys play in the stock market? Are you?
I have a 401k.
I have a 401k too.
I don't play. I listen.
It goes up and down.
I always have said this, that I could destroy any company in the world, frankly, by investing in them.
Okay.
Bring them to destruction.
You could always listen to William Devane and just put all your money in Roslyn Capital Gold. I think they pay him in gold because he's on TV all the time.
Yeah, I saw somebody. By the way, I did do the stock market with my 401k investments for a number of years, and it worked out really well. But then the closer you get to retirement, Fred, the less risk you're willing to take. I said, quote, play the stock market. I understand stocks are a risk, but they're an educated, but you can still... It's not a gamble, okay? You can have, because if it were a gamble, you'd be in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I know some people say, well, the stock market is a gamble, but there's a science to it, okay? You can educate yourself and you hire people who are educated on what companies are doing well, going to do well in stocks and so forth and so on. So anyway.
I prefer to...
What do you prefer to?
I prefer to invest in this business that I've undertaken.
Yeah. I thought you said you could make any business fail.
Well, no, this is a sure thing, Tim.
Oh.
So what I just need from the people in this room, just need three of you to invest.
Right. And contact three of our friends.
And then you contact three of your friends each. And then we'll all be rich.
Then we send a letter to those three people.
Yeah.
And they're going to send a letter to us with $20 in there, right?
Yeah. Can I caution? Ed's Italian. Investing in an Italian-owned business.
That's uncalled for.
Oh, wow.
Known for their pyramids, okay?
That's uncalled for. We have a history of being just ordinary businessmen.
Right. That's right.
Who are just trying to make an honest living in America, and we have to undergo this kind of...
And somehow people disappear.
Yeah, that's well. They go sleep with the fishes.
Bad things happen, okay? You want to go boating in the Atlantic? Sometimes bad things happen.
You don't come back.
They got that triangle out there.
Oh, man, we are piling on.
All right, let's move on.
The Italian stereotype.
Yes.
And crime families.
Exactly.
Looking for a cannoli joke.
It's kind of slander.
But go ahead.
You leave the gun and take the cannoli.
There you go.
Is that a line from The Godfather?
That is a line from The Godfather. You never leave a good cannoli behind.
Oh, man. In other news. Yes, in other news, Chris, go ahead.
Speaking of crime, FBI Director Christopher Wray says he intends to resign before President-elect Trump takes office in January.
Huh, wonder why that is.
It was kind of rumored. It was speculated, but Fox actually beat the Associated Press in reporting this yesterday, saying he was going to go ahead and step down. I've got a little bit of audio. Speaking at a podium, he was at an event when he broke the news here. Clip two.
After weeks of careful thought, I've decided the right thing for the Bureau is for me to serve until the end of the current administration in January and then step down.
After weeks of careful thought, following the election of Donald Trump.
You can't fire me. I quit.
Well, that's exactly what he's doing right there. Yes. Of course, it's, I don't know, you can look back through history. It's not uncommon for FBI directors to stay over from one administration to the next, even Republican to Democrat or Democrat to Republican. But in this case, he knows that President Trump is going to start over and name a new, well, he's already, so, I mean, why sit around and wait till, you know, to be called out to the guillotine?
Yeah.
You know, just go ahead and resign now and go to the House. And that's what Christopher Wray has chosen to do. Ironically, Christopher Wray was chosen by then President Trump to take over the FBI. Mm-hmm. Was it from James Comey?
Yes.
Yes.
So he's been there. What is that now?
That's almost 10 years ago. That Trump took office.
Because it's a 10-year term, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I think it's a 10-year term.
Trump took office in January of 2017, so you're looking at about 8 years difference. Yeah.
Hey, that's a very important position in our government, the director of the FBI. So, you know, I hope that the gentleman that President Trump is going to appoint, Kash Patel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope he's up to the job.
Yeah.
And I hope he does a good job. I hope he's an honest man. And I don't know him. I like what I hear when he's on TV, and I like what he said, but I hope he's successful in administering justice as part of the FBI.
And cleaning house.
Yeah.
I think a lot of bad habits were developed under the Biden
administration. Smoking in the boys' room, for example. I hear that goes on there.
Now they're vaping.
No, the FBI has been tainted. Let's be honest; we all know that with things that they've done. Not all the agents, obviously, are bad. Most of them are probably good, honest, hardworking, patriotic Americans. But there's some bad apples in leadership, and there's some bad apples in the field. And Kash Patel is going to clean house, I think. Uh-huh. Don't you?
I absolutely do. And I listen. I know there are good people working in the FBI, because Fox Mulder and Dana Scully, I mean, they've been working in the FBI for, look at Tim.
That sounds like characters from a Disney movie.
No, from the X-Files.
Yes.
Oh, well, from a TV show.
I just thought I'd throw a sci-fi. You wanted to go right to the music.
Yeah.
You know, smoking in the boys' room.
Right.
Which is bad no matter where you're smoking, folks, obviously.
Right.
But
right.
I wanted to throw a sci-fi reference in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You got me. You got me. You want me to go full King of Queens on you? Episode King 9?
Yeah.
From season 3?
King of Queens.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, I do. One of the senators that's already been meeting with FBI director nominee Kash Patel is Senator Josh Hawley. It's a 21-second clip, if we can play it here. This is what Hawley had to say about Mr. Patel. Clip 3.
He pledged to me today that he would be absolutely transparent and he would make available to the public all the facts about who, for instance, came up with the idea to try to recruit spies in Catholic churches. Who is it who gave the green light to send SWAT teams to the homes of pro-life demonstrators? Who is it that green-lighted sending the FBI to the homes of parents who went to school board meetings?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just going to say. Yeah. That's great.
Amen. We do need to know those things. Yes. Good for Josh Hawley.
We're
going to
be busy next year
and,
with
listen,
anything.
I also want to know something about the two guys, young men that tried to shoot Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I want to know something about the guest list at the at Epstein Island. You know, we need to find out about, you know, were people lying to FISA courts? All this kind of stuff is I'm hoping somewhere inside the building of the FBI. I love this attitude. We need answers, because democracy dies in darkness.
It does.
That.
Yeah.
What he had just said.
The Washington Post.
It's profound.
Yeah. It's going to be a very busy year. I mean, we have Cash Patel. You've got Robert F. Kennedy Jr. potentially running Human Services.
These Senate hearings here are going to be downright entertaining.
It will be the most exciting moments on C-SPAN in a very long time.
Well, I know around the building. By the way, folks,
right?
Please don't email me.
No, don't.
This is not a democracy. I don't want to get started in that discussion.
I know what you meant.
Everyone knows what I meant, except for that 2% of right. 2% of you.
It's a representative republic, a constitutional republic. They get triggered.
It's a representative democracy in the form of a republic.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was going to say is around this building, you're going to hear lots of televisions, lots of computers turned to these hearings that's going to be must-see TV.
And I think there's going to be a huge difference this time from the first Trump administration. All the mainstream media went after Trump. But we know there's a revolution going on within the media as well. Zuckerberg.
Oh, yeah.
Just gave Trump $1 million for the inauguration.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's a
Trump is making the world come to heel.
Yeah.
They will bow down.
It's fascinating.
It is interesting that the world is kind of having to deal with the fact that there's a new sheriff in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the old sheriff that we didn't like. No, you're not going to believe this. He's back.
Yeah, these European leaders.
Listen, I mean, you get, what is the old, I mean, to have a comeback like Trump has.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't help but.
This is Rocky Balboa.
But yes. You know, walk around and go, hey, look at me now. How you like me now? We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.